Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
We have a return guest this morning who was first on our show a little over 3 years ago. We have Lisa Meeks with us. She owns Senior Care Options, and she's the CEO and also a geriatric care manager. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming.
My pleasure.
So it has been a while, so remind us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, where you went to school, and how you got to be doing what you're doing today.
Okay. My name is Lisa Meeks. I'm a geriatric care manager, and I founded Senior Care Options in 2001. My background is in therapeutic recreation, and I worked at the Emory University Hospital, and I also worked at the VA hospital in their nursing home. And it just seemed like a good opportunity at the time. My mother, who was an RN, began her care management practice. She was living in Chicago, and she was so excited about starting this new career venture and being an advocate for her patients that it sounded like a really great idea. So I left the VA hospital, and I went and stayed with her for a couple of weeks and shadowed her and learned the paperwork that she had developed, and I came back here and started doing it.
Now, are you originally from Chicago?
No, I'm not. I'm not. She lived there. I grew up in Jacksonville, Florida.
And she moved from Jacksonville to Chicago on purpose?
She got a job opportunity. She remarried. She moved up there.
Now, why do you say that? Because you would go back to Chicago, if I understand correctly, if the right opportunity presented itself. Didn't you and Lisa like Chicago?
If It would be a very cold day in Atlanta.
If you don't like the weather today.
Well said, Brad. Well said. I got to keep this in the family content, right?
Exactly. I'm sorry.
We digress.
That's fine.
In fact, I interrupted you, Sam. You were asking a question.
I don't remember. Let's go on. Go ahead. Let's make this show about Lisa, not about
us. All right.
Us.
No problem. Okay. Yeah, so I came back to Atlanta and I started working. I was a solo practitioner for a few years, and then business grew, and I really enjoyed having that ability to be the advocate for the senior population. I'm championing for them, being the voice for them. I find that this population, our older adults, being very civic minded, they want to be good patients, but to them that means not to complain. So they're not always the best self-reporters when they go to the physician's office because they want to get a good grade on being there and being a good patient, but they're not necessarily understanding what the doctor tells them to do. So I really liked being able to almost translate for them and make sure that they were getting what they needed to get.
So you've kind of described what you do, but tell us a little bit more about, you know, I think even now, the term geriatric care manager confuses a lot of people. They're not really sure what that is or what you do. So tell us a little bit more about that.
All right. I tell people it's a little like a cross between the hospital caseworker and a daughter for hire. So we're developing care plans for the folks that you care about most so that they get the care that you want them to have. And we do assessments. We advocate for the best care possible. We are always looking at reevaluating what do they need now, what do they need now. A lot of people think that their loved ones, once they're placed in an assisted living or they mitigate whatever circumstance has been happening, that they're done. But aging is progressive. We're going to continue. Things change, and our bodies do eventually become more frail. That means we need more care at different times, and the families are not always, they mean well, they want what's best, but they don't know what's best. So we're here to guide them.
In my mind, Lisa, I understand obviously, and because of my experience, mm-hmm. but I have a great amount of empathy for the layperson.
Yes.
This industry that we are in is extremely confusing.
Yes,
just
it
as
is.
The conversation we had and me not understanding this Medicare arrangements
yeah.
today,
yeah.
after spending 20 some years doing that, it's not what I am familiar with. So, with that being said, my question is: describe, draw a picture, a case analysis of what you do, so that our listeners actually know what it is that you do on a daily basis, and you know, tell us about a situation or something of that nature.
Well, I just want to explain very quickly that the foundation of what we do is always an evaluation. We need to assess. It's a needs assessment. And it's different than everybody does an assessment. So the term, that word itself, is confusing to the layperson. I think that they think, well, home health came out here, they did an assessment, or a hospice came out and they did an assessment. That's terrific. That assessment really serves their purposes. Can they provide the care? Do you need what they are selling you? I don't do that because I'm not selling you anything in particular. I'm going to connect the dots for you. So when I do assessment, I want to know, whole person, what do you need? Legally, financially, activities of daily living, medications. I'm looking soup to nuts. What does this whole person need? And then I will find all the different resources, from pet care to new physicians to in-home services for non-skilled care, such as Griswold.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Or do they need a living arrangement? Do we need to really look at a memory care placement? Whatever it may be for that person, it is highly individualized. So I just wanted to make that very clear.
I think right there, a whole person.
Whole person.
And you're right. Various organizations, we do assessments. Griswold Special Care, mm-hmm. Griswold Home Care. Sorry, I do that. And but we assess based upon the services that we provide.
Correct.
Not outside of that scope of
Correct.
Services. And what you're saying is you take all these various scopes of mm-hmm. of need mm-hmm. and assess the whole picture. That's
Correct.
Very good.
Okay. Correct. So, and I always tell people, this is your assessment. We give them this really big report, and then we go over it with them. We sit down with the family and review everything so that they understand, because there's going to be some medical jargon in there, but we want to make sure that we're speaking clearly and plainly so that people understand. You can get plenty of medical jargon from the doctor, and you still don't maybe fully understand what dementia diagnosis, what does that mean? So we're going to explain it to you, so that you feel empowered to make these decisions, and then we're going to give you the recommendations, and then you do whatever you feel like you need to do. So that's the heart of what we're doing. But the advocacy piece fits in with the doctor's visits or any other provider. Sometimes we need to advocate when somebody's on hospice and their pain is not being managed correctly, because we may be seeing them at a different time than the hospice provider might be there. So we might be just seeing different things, and then can report back and then ask the family, what would you like to do? And is there anything that we can, an action item for them?
With that, would you provide a service of actually going to physician's appointment or an
yes.
appointment?
Yep.
So
absolutely.
You would be that coach, that counsel
yes.
in that environment.
Yep. In the environment. I'll give you an example because you asked for one. I had a client that had memory impairment. And he got to a point where he became incontinent of bladder. And he did have a caregiver, and the caregiver said, oh, we'll just put him in Depends. And I said, thanks for playing, but that's not the right answer. We need to look at the root source of why this is, not just what's easier for you. I didn't say it quite like that, but that's the gist of it.
Sure. Yeah.
That'd be okay.
And
sometimes
so I said,
they need to be talked to that way.
I know. So we wanted to look for, is there a medical cause for this change? So we ran urinalysis, and he was fine. There was no medical concern. There was no change in medication. So I retested his cognition, and he had lost 3 points on his mini mental status exam, which would explain why there would be a change in his ability to do his ADLs, activities of daily living. So I called the physician and said, there's been a change, and this is the point difference, and this is, you know, what I'm thinking, and what, you know, I just want you to be aware. And he said, well, I'll put him on a bladder antispasmodic medication, which I will not name. And I said, I don't really think that's the best choice, because he takes these other medications. The type of medication that he wanted is a complete opposite of the medication he was taking for his cognitive status. And the doctor didn't like that I told him that.
Surprise.
I know. And he said, well, the only side effects that are mentioned were dry mouth and something else. And I said, yes, but this is an anticholinergic medication, and he's on a cholinesterase reuptake. So they're going to oppose each other, and it's not going to work. And in the meantime, the reason that he's now incontinent is because of his brain, not his bladder. So why are you giving him a bladder medication? So he told me to just do what I wanted to do. And I said, good, that's what I wanted to hear. So I reported back to the family who had asked me to have this interaction. I said, doctor said I could do what I wanted. But I explained. And the family was thrilled that somebody thought enough to question, is this the right medication? Because it would have caused some bladder retention. And it wasn't that he was having a bladder spasm. It's that his brain wasn't telling him that he needed to go to the bathroom. So this medication would have made him more forgetful and at risk for dehydration and urinary retention.
So
it would have made it worse.
That's a really impressive story.
Oh, awesome.
How did you know that? And because you're not a nurse or a doctor by training.
No, I'm not. But I've been in healthcare for a long time now, and you hopefully pick up a few things. But I certainly try to get a lot of continuing education and to understand the function of the medications, so that I can advocate. But I always tell people, I'm not practicing medicine. But if you have questions, you must ask your physician so that they are informed.
So where I was going with that is I suspect that you did some research around the medications that they were on and the medications they were taking.
Absolutely.
And that's not all that common, I don't think. I mean, we don't hear stories like this very often. And that's a, in my mind, a very distinguishing feature to the service that you offer. Do you find this happening often?
For our service to do that?
No.
In the industry?
No, that's why I have a job.
But also finding out that there are issues with the medications that are being prescribed.
Oh, there are lots of medication errors are a huge number of why people even end up in the hospital. Here's an aside, and I'm not faulting doctors. They are busy people.
Well, and I'm glad you're going there. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I do want to be clear to our listening audience that was the physician that you were talking to his neurologist?
No, he was just the general practitioner.
There you go. So typically, no one understands this. But typically, the general practitioner is unaware of what medication the neurologist has prescribed.
That is correct.
Okay, and that's why this happens.
Oh,
it's not the fault of the physician, the general practitioner. It is our system. Now,
I agree.
Now, I mean, this has been a problem. There's no mass, no major area to compile all of the historical medical data so that a single practitioner sees all total history. If that general practitioner had known total history, more than likely he would have known that there would have been an interaction. Now, general people will say, well, why isn't there? That would be the efficient way of doing it.
Yes.
Well, that then gets over into the situation of privacy. We don't want everyone to have access to all of our medical. So there's two, the public has got to understand it. You can't have the cake and eat it too.
That's
correct. You got to give something up.
That's correct. And one of the things that we do as care managers is to be that point person, to know as much as we possibly can to protect them in those situations. We want to make sure we are informed to let the families be as educated a consumer as possible.
Yeah. You know, in this particular case, we're not talking about some kind of catastrophic error.
No.
We're talking about a situation where he was going to prescribe something that would
it's quality of life. It would be a quality of life issue, and that's one of the biggest things that we're always trying to promote for our folks. We'd love for them to be healthy. We'd love for them to live longer, but many of my clients are the frail elderly. I can actually buy them some time by providing really great oversight and care. But we can't keep anybody here on the planet longer than they're supposed to be. And we just want to make sure that we're looking closely at how they can have the best quality of life possible.
It's, you know, it's hard to measure, too, what the value of that quality of life is. You know, in the instance that we were just discussing, you know, how do you put a value on an ability to remain continent a little bit longer? I don't know how to do that, but I know it's worth something.
Oh, yeah.
And when, you know, I think one of the issues that you must deal with all the time is people look at your hourly rates and say, oh, my gosh, I can't afford that. You know, was she an attorney? And
they do say that. They do say that, actually. What are you charging like an attorney? And the answer is yes.
But the reality is an attorney can go out and solve a problem for you that you may never be able to solve, or if you did, it would take you hours and hours, weeks and weeks.
Yep.
And the same concept applies here.
Correct.
In a few hours, you can solve a problem that a family may never be able to solve.
And they may not even know it's there.
And to go back to Brad's question, this is common. This situation that you just described is common.
Very.
It's not the abnormality, it's the norm. And not 100%, but there's more of these situations than not. And it is a function of our culture, our society, and our profession. You and I were talking before the show. 25 years ago, as care managers, we were trying to figure out some means of a national repository for all this data.
Mm-hmm.
We have the technology. We had the technology then. But there's the concept of privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what prohibits this from going on.
So how I'm sure there's, I mean, it's a dangerous question. I always tell my clients that ask me for, you know, people ask me all the time, well, what's the average age of your caregiver? Okay.
Well, boy, that's 40s, that's a death trap.
You know, we got caregivers in their 70s and caregivers in their 20s, so how does 40s help you? But in general, how many hours do you spend with a particular client? I mean, is it...
It varies. You know, our typical stable, you can't see, I'm stable client, my air quotes.
Right.
It could be once a week, once every other week for an hour. It's not a lot. Just for maintenance, for ongoing care management, my policy is one visit a month.
Okay.
So that I make sure that our staff stays current. Were there medication changes? Is there a difference in cognition? Is there any problem? Are they not eating like they were eating? You know, is their mood different? It helps us that if a crisis occurs and there is a change, we like to be proactive, not reactive, to the best of our ability. And that way we can ramp up, get in there, and start fixing things before it becomes a full-blown crisis. That's the best use of our service. Some people we see, you know, once a week, but then there's always the crisis management. I could not begin to tell you how many hours that would take. It depends on what's going on. It could be...
So
very intensive.
When you get a new client, I assume you start with some kind of get-to-know-you assessment?
The assessment. Our process is lengthy. It's probably a little more involved than some other care managers, but our process takes up to 10 hours for one individual. There's the face-to-face in their home, wherever that is, and then getting back to the primary caregivers to get the real story. And then we write up a report. It is lengthy and very thoughtful in its process to find what, in an individualized way, what is the best recommendations for this person. And then we get together with the family and present the report. It could be 25 pages long. It's hefty. Mm. But I want them to feel that they got something.
Right.
And it wasn't that it was like, oh, well, we already knew all of this. I don't hear that. I hear, oh, my gosh, I had no idea.
And what might you expect to find in that report?
We're looking at seven different areas. We're looking at activities of daily living. What kind of care does this person need? It helps us to have a good understanding of how well they're able to care for themselves, either for hiring a home care company that's non-skilled, or if they're moving into an assisted living, we can help with the individualized service plan because we know the answers to the questions. And sometimes the families don't fully understand what their loved one tells them about bathing, and we're looking for other cues. Is the bathroom wet? Are there things, hoarding behaviors that they could never get into the bathroom? Just, you know, one of the biggest clues for us is when somebody says, oh, I sponge bathe, which in my world means I'm not bathing. Mm-hmm. So it's always kind of an interesting thing. But the families will go, oh, well, they sponge bathe. They're going to take that at face value because they don't want to realize it's painful to see that your loved one's not bathing.
Right. It's real interesting, and all this gets into human dynamics mm-hmm. and personality. It's not that the family members, in my belief, Sam Grass, it's not that they don't understand or see, but we humans want to live in a state of denial about what's really happening.
It's
and
easy.
By acknowledging mm-hmm. what you just described, mm-hmm. we have to come to face-to-face
you
with the
to
fact
take action.
That we're just two or three steps behind,
mm-hmm.
and yep. we don't want to do that.
No, it's ego driven, but I don't mean for it to be that way. We really, you know,
it's just human nature.
Just
we don't want to. We don't want to admit that we're going to get old and frail yeah. and decrepit.
And our clients, that the elders don't want somebody to know
that's
how
right.
they're coping
yeah.
and what's right. what they're passing, what's just passing by,
yeah.
and. Ultimately, we want, again, it's the quality of life thing. We want them to be clean. We want that because that's important for their health. And we want to get them to a place where they feel safe about that. So some of the questions would be, well, tell me why you're sponge bathing. You know, is there a fear of falling?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a fear? Is there a modesty concern? Is there a coldness or a pain concern? So those are some of the things that we might be trying to tease out. Oh, you have bursitis? Well, no wonder you don't like to take your shirt off. It hurts.
Yeah.
And then I can tell the caregiver, we'll talk to the doctor, but let's take a Tylenol 625 or whatever, some sort of analgesic, 40 minutes before the shower so that their pain is being treated so that when you go to take the shirt off, it's not going to hurt and you're not going to have a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And especially folks who have dementia, they can't express it
right.
verbally.
Right.
They'll express it in other ways, but they're not going to verbally say, this hurts me, I don't want to do this. They'll just say no, or they'll hit you. Or some other thing, they may cuss at you. So we look at ADL function. We're looking at the legal status. Do they have what they need? No, I'm not an attorney. I may bill like one, but I don't draw up those papers for people. But I know what I'm looking for. And if you don't have what you need, there's only so much I can do. And then we want to steer you to the right direction to
right.
get the proper paperwork in place. We're looking at the medical history. Who are their physicians, their preferred hospital, what medications do they take, what surgical history, et cetera, et cetera. We want to know their health history. And then, of course, whatever current things are happening that they're, why did they call us? It's usually
you know,
medical.
You know, with that, and again, I've gone back to this theme now the third time, and I promise I won't make it again, but you now are becoming that center repository for all this information to coordinate it. And that's what's needed. Again, our laws and our way our, we look at things, we don't want a lot of people to have access to this, but someone needs to. And
mm-hmm.
it takes an individual such as you mm-hmm. to be able to pull it all together.
Well, a lot of times people think that their kids by osmosis are going to know this stuff.
They can't.
And they don't.
They can't. It's. I just got to explain. I spent 20-some mm-hmm. years, and I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Brad's going to say, well, you were educated in West Virginia. Okay, I know where he's coming from. But nevertheless, you know, the bottom line is I'm not maybe not the brightest star, but I'm not a dummy either. And it's hard. It's hard to stay current no matter who you are or what's going on.
But you were in the business, in the industry.
Oh, yeah.
So can you imagine somebody who has no health care background at all is supposed to understand this?
Yeah.
Well, and beyond that, even if we had a repository for all this information, there still is a requirement for somebody to interpret it.
That's part of our function.
That's exactly right.
So we do that. We're also looking at finances again. I don't want to see anybody's checking account or anything, but I just to have an understanding of what resources do you have, what resources are available to you so that you can get the care, because the more access you have to funding, the more choices you have. That's just a reality. So it helps me make better recommendations if I know what you can afford.
Right.
So we're looking at that. The cognitive piece and mental health piece is one of the largest parts of our assessment. We're looking at geriatric depression. We do two screening tools for mild cognitive impairment, two for regular, more advanced cognitive impairment. We also do a pre-screen for driving for those who are still driving but probably shouldn't be. So it's just a very quick, we don't get behind the wheel, but it's a paper test to see how their speed of problem solving is.
What are typically your recommendations for a client that has mild cognitive impairment, you know, early cognitive impairment?
My belief at this time is to seek help either through a neurologist or a geriatric psychiatrist to go ahead and start treating it now, because it will slow down the progression. And a lot of people think, well, I'm not that bad, I don't need it yet. But if you think about that, if you wait, you're losing capacity, you're losing skills and functioning that won't come back while you're waiting to be bad enough, quote unquote, bad enough to take this medication. But if you take the medication earlier, you won't get that bad for a long time.
Yeah, people don't view mental diseases.
Yes.
The same as they do physical
Absolutely.
Diseases. They would not,
drives me nuts.
Would not, most likely, they would not hesitate or they would not delay treatment.
Oh, if they were pre-diabetic and they required medication,
right. or
there would be a no question.
Exactly,
no question,
they're,
I'd
they're
absolutely
going
do
to treat it because mm-hmm. the quicker they start, mm-hmm. the better, the longer the quality of life and the better the outcomes.
Right.
Well, maybe they should, you know, for marketing purposes, not call it, just like they call it pre-diabetic, maybe they should call it pre-dementia, not mild cognitive impairment.
Exactly.
People don't understand what that means. All right, it's pre-dementia. You want to get full-blown dementia?
Yeah.
No. Well, then take this medication.
And the bottom line is nobody would ever find a little spot of cancer and say, well, let's just watch this for a minute.
Well, right. Yeah, that's right.
You're not going to do that. You're going to treat it.
Yep.
You're going to
get
rid of it.
But precancerous lesions, they remove, so they don't become cancerous. So maybe we should just trademark pre-dementia.
Here's another problem with that, and it's vivid in my mind, because yesterday the individual that I met with, ladies my age, 58.
So she's young.
More, yes, ma'am. thank you. Notice Brad didn't help me out there. Certainly more than moderate Alzheimer's, more. Visited with them and asked me the same question four times in 5 minutes.
So that's probably...
I mean, just... But the point that I'm going to make there is it's Alzheimer's. But the doctors wouldn't diagnose her with Alzheimer's. They wanted to diagnose her in just dementia because Alzheimer's is a finality and there's not much they can do beyond that.
All right. I have two responses to that. The first one is, and I apologize to the physicians in your audience.
Don't get us in trouble, is it?
I, just as a professional, do not care for the dementia diagnosis. Yeah. Dementia is a symptom. It's an umbrella of symptoms. And you want to look for the root cause. Dementia is just that your brain doesn't work right. Short-term memory, behavioral changes, etc. Your brain is not working properly. That's not really a diagnosis. That's a symptom. So what is causing that? And I think that people are afraid to put their finger on it because what if they were wrong?
Yeah.
You know, they're afraid for malpractice or whatever reasons.
You're
but
right.
The other thing is you want to get the right specialist to make the diagnosis because the GP doesn't know enough about the brain function. Again, I'm trying to be as diplomatic as I can be. I would go for a specialist.
Well, that's exactly why they have specialists. I mean, the general practitioners have got to swallow the ego pill and realize where their expertise is and where
Well, they can confirm. They can say, yeah, there's dementia. You need to get a diagnosis from a specialist. That would be a great referral right there.
At what point should a family be looking at some kind of assessment for cognitive impairment?
If they're noticing a change, or the neighbors are calling, or the people at church say something is different, if you see that something is different, then you absolutely need to look into it. The earliest of that pre-dementia, you would see where they don't remember the details of some recent event, either something in the news or a holiday or the family get together. And if you were to quiz them on it and they don't remember the details and they give you some vague, fluffy answer, but if you try to drill down and they just don't remember, that's an early indicator. When you get to things like word confusion or word loss or improper use of language, they're already, you could probably diagnose them at that point.
How do you distinguish between just not a very good memory, or maybe you weren't listening, and some kind of impairment? So I'll give you an example. So I went to an event Sunday night where a number of folks were together, and a lot of them were from the church we attend. And one of the guys asked about the sermon.
Mm-hmm.
And what, you know, there were three things that the preacher talked about. What were they? Like, I don't know. And I actually listened, but I had no idea. You know, so, and if you asked what the preacher preached on last week, I couldn't even tell you the topic probably. So how do you distinguish between, you know, and Sam can never remember names, so there you go.
Well, that's a whole
thing.
Forgetting names is very common. A lot of people, myself included. There's also, when people are under stress, it's hard to recall short-term memories. It's just, they get cut off. The difference between this and a real memory impairment would be if you go into another room and you suddenly say, "What did I come in here for?" But if you go back and retrace your steps and go, "Oh, yeah, it was the aluminum foil," that's not dementia.
Right.
That's normal.
That's right.
It's the part where you go into the room and you don't know what the room was for, or you have no concept of why you were there.
And you can't go back
and
retrace it.
And you can't go back and retrace it. So as we age, it is very normal to have our processors are slower. I'll make a computer analogy. Young people are like brand new computers. There's no files on them. They run real fast. They'll come up, you know, and make all the noises, and they're fabulous. If you have an older computer, it has to go through a lot of files before it comes up. As we get older, we just have more files.
And that's a beautiful picture. My only problem is that what do you do with an old computer?
You add more memory to it.
Okay, I love it. Thank
okay?
you.
Okay, just put more RAM, you'll be fine.
Throw it in the trash, right?
No. So, you know, to take that a little bit further, it just takes us longer to find what we're looking for because we have a lot of things to search in our brains at remarkable speeds.
That's
our
good.
Brains are amazing. When the connections are not being made or there's damage to the brain, it doesn't function like it is supposed to. And those are the folks who then don't remember how to use a fork or can't remember common names like their children, somebody that there's no way you wouldn't know who that was. But they can't pull up the name. It's in there somewhere, but they can't access it.
Real interesting, back to the visit I had, and here's what was the telltale sign for the male in this house. And again, this occurred 4 years ago. So this is 58. She was in her mid-50s. He came home one day, and her car was parked in the garage. It never is parked in the garage. And the space for her car was very, very limited. To the degree is, she got it in there, and you couldn't open the driver's side door or the passenger side door. And he looked at it, wondered, what in the world? And he goes in to talk to her, and she's got no knowledge or understanding or memory of doing it. I mean, that was pretty evident to him, right, that something's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought she had had a stroke.
Oh.
He went down the road as far as a stroke, but it wasn't. You know, it was this dementia, Alzheimer, mm-hmm. cognitive impairment, mm-hmm. however you want to mm-hmm. describe it. Mm.
Mm. We are starting to run short on time because we have a show following us today. But I did want to ask one more question about your business before we kind of go into the piece of advice, and that is, when should somebody start talking to you? And what are the things that they should look for that would say, you know, it's time to call Lisa?
Well, that really does tie in with the advice that I was sort of planning on. One of the things that I tell people, especially the primary caregivers, is if you are worried about what's going to happen to that person, should something happen to you, it's time to call somebody to get help. You need to have a plan. The advice to your caregivers, to the listening audience, is to have a plan. Not having a plan is not having a plan. And I've talked to plenty of people who make assumptions about what their children will do and never discussed it with them. And that's A, not fair, and B, not realistic. Yeah. So that's not a plan either. So it's important to have a plan. But as far as when to call us, if you're at a point in time as a caregiver and there's a change and you're not really sure what to do next, you're feeling overwhelmed or you're facing some decision, that's a great time to get advice from a professional. And a geriatric care manager would be a great person. I would love to say everyone should have one and that you should pre-plan so that you have your roadmap laid out for you. That's not realistic. People aren't going
but
to do
there's
that.
That's truth. Now it might not be absolute, but there's a lot of truth.
Oh,
in
absolutely.
That statement.
And what could happen in a situation like that, if somebody's really on top of it, is they could come to you, they could get a plan, and then you might not see them for
six months or years, even.
Yeah,
definitely.
Until it's time to implement the plan.
Correct.
Interesting.
That's good. Great
advice,
Lisa. It's I told you it would go quickly. Here we are, and I certainly appreciate it. Good information, good conversation, and it was a pleasure. Thank you very much. For our listening audience that want to reach out to you, Senior Care Options, please give them that information.
They can call at 770-579-9177 or look at the website. We've got a blog. I have some radio spots they can listen to. It's www.seniorcareopt.com.
That's great. And for reference, where do you work in the Atlanta market?
Anywhere in the metro Atlanta area, North Georgia. I'll even expand it to North Georgia.
Good. Lisa, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
Hopefully we can make this a third time.
Okay. That sounds good.
I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
That's it for today. We, once again, thank Lisa for being with us, Senior Care Options. And we want to remind the listening audience that they can always listen to a rebroadcast at eugeriaradio.com. And in closing, if the youth of this nation is its greatest national resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.